Welcome into the wealthiest show on radio. I am Ernest Davis, and this is Real Money, Real Talk. Others want to make friends? I'm just trying to help make you some money and help you make smart financial decisions to empower your financial future. Have you ever wondered what it takes to start minding your own business? No, not in the sense of where you're focused on other folk and what they're doing, but digging deep into your own acres of untapped opportunities. We'll talk about that. Plus, in the event the pandemic has you considering changing careers, we'll talk about the top job industries for the future, because Real Money, Real Talk starts now. So, if you're like me, the walls are closing in on you. And something that isolation does is that it causes you to think differently than it does when you're with people. Because oftentimes when you're in isolation, unlike when you're with people, the only voice you can hear in isolation is the voice of your own. The voice within yourself, the voice of God. And it's oftentimes in isolation when you really can gain more clarity on your life, where it is you're going. Because there's something about isolation is that when all the other opinions, when all the other voices, when all the other thoughts and input are just not around you, you're faced with the person looking back at you in the mirror. And I tell you, one of the things this sheltering place has really reinforced in me is that being in a quarantine has really given me, I'm sure like you, a deeper, much deeper appreciation for freedom. And it has increased my appetite even more to remain steady on the path of building economic freedom. Because outside of just trying to play it safe with the social distancing, we are thinking about our economic situations, all of us. And if nothing else, this reinforces the importance of keeping your eye not just on the prize, but your eye on the account balance, your eye on the financial performance, your eye on your financial plan, your eye on your just-in-case plan B, your eye on your emergency funds and what you need to have to sustain you in the event something like this happens again. Oh, yeah, it has you thinking about a lot of things. And if you've got a question about these things, I want you to give me a call at 404-880-WCLK during the show, because I want to answer your questions. I want to make sure, as I've always said, that this show is giving you what you need to empower you for your financial well-being. This pandemic reinforces another thing that we all should be thinking about, which is the importance of having multiple streams of income. Yeah, more than one source, so that you're not totally dependent on one company, one being, one person. Just think about it. This reinforces the fact that there's one or two people in most people's lives that has control over whether or not they eat or not. That's kind of scary, isn't it? That with one phone call from your employer, or even those, some of those who are in business, and you may only have one or two large clients, one phone call from that large client that represents 70% of your business, or from that employer that says, hey, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to reopen again, or we're no longer going to need your position. That changes everything for you. You don't want to be in a position where you give any being, any person, any situation that kind of control over your life. Because what it does is that it upsets so many things that you've worked so hard for your entire life. This is what the pandemic reinforces for all of us. And the third thing that it reinforces for me, and I'm so grateful to have my own, is that there's nothing like having your own. Because when you have your own, when it's time to have a board meeting, you don't have to call the boss. You don't have to call, you know, your supervisor. You call a meeting and you say, everybody present? You go, aye, and accounted for. Anybody nay? There are no nays, because it's your boardroom, it's your business, and it's your own. Not to say that owning a business makes it any easier than working for others, because they're both as equally challenging, all right? But what it does is it does give you a little more control over what happens in your financial future. So the reality is sheltering in place does have advantages, because it allows you to get out of the everyday hustle. It allows you to get away from the social gatherings. It allows you to get away from some of the normal to-do things so that you can listen to your own voice and you can become the master of your future. All right. So I want to know, for those of you that are considering to own a business, those of you who own a business, even those of you who have no desire to own a business, you don't own a business and you're in a working career, I want you to listen to what we have to talk about today, because even if you're in a career, you are your business. Human capital. That's what that is. Someone is investing in you for a return of their business. And something that someone always told me is that unless you build your own business, someone will hire you to build theirs. And there's nothing wrong with that, because everyone's not meant to be an entrepreneur, but everyone should have the entrepreneurial spirit. And that's what brings value to your life. That brings economic security to your life. When you're thinking about yourself as a business, when you're thinking about your business in the right way as a business, when you're thinking about that idea, your acres of diamonds that you should be mining within yourself, that's what this show is about today. So the question I'm going to ask you is, are you using this time to mind your own business? Well, again, I'm not talking about what the neighbors are doing or what your friends are doing or scrolling up and down social media trying to determine what other folk are doing. Are you using this time to mind your own business? Derek in Atlanta has a question, which is, what's the best plan of action without savings or retirement at age 59? Derek, turn your radio down for me, okay?
Yes, sir. I'm just walking. I don't have a radio going on.
Okay, good deal. I heard some echo there. So ask me your question.
What do you do?
What do you do?
You're broke and you have nothing, and you have to start from zero, ground zero, 59.
Well,
what do you do? You don't have much time left. So what do you do?
Well, here's the thing. Don't claim that you don't have much time left. 59 years of age is not old. I might remind everyone, have you ever heard of Warren Buffett, billionaire Warren Buffett?
Yes, sir.
Billionaire Warren Buffett made the majority of his billions after the age of 50. Because he knew where to put his money. Now, I will say to you that 50 today is a little different than 50 then, because he did invest a lot of his money after the Depression and after there were a lot of economic downturns. But that's some of what we're in now. Now, I think Depression is off the table. But the point I'm trying to say is that there is a lot you can do with 15 years. There's a lot you can do with 20 years. There is a lot you can do. And I would start by looking at what your current income is. So what you're going to have to do is that when you're older, you have to make more drastic changes, drastic shifts in your life to catch up, to play catch up. Now, the one thing you can do is to start participating in a 401k and maxing out your 401k. Are you currently in a 401k now?
Not yet. I'm getting ready to start one. Getting ready to go in the morning and speak with someone in regards to a Roth as well.
Fantastic. Now, do you own your own business or you work for a company that does a 401k?
Work for a company that does a 401k.
Fantastic. Do they have matching?
Yes, they do.
Oh, awesome. Okay, you're in business. So what you have to do is you have to really change your life in terms of how you manage your finances. Because the thing about 401ks is that most people don't understand is that you can max out way beyond what your employer puts in. Like, most people think that if your employer only matches 3% of your income, then that means you can only put 3% of your income in. No, that's not true. You can actually put up to $18,000 of your income in, and you can actually, after 50 years of age, you can play what the IRS calls catch up. So for all the contributions that you didn't make up until the age of 50, you can actually make additional contributions. So you can contribute up to $25,000 a year in your 401k. Now, what that's going to do, that's going to help your tax base, because that's going to reduce your tax base down, because you gain some tax savings when you do that on the front end. Now, I understand you may say, how in the world am I going to be able to put away $25,000 a year in a 401k? Well, you may have to make some changes. That changes could be downsizing the car, downsizing the size of your home, adding a roommate, getting a side hustle, an extra job, starting a side business. The point I'm trying to say is that with a plan, what you need to do is pick the number you are going to need by the time you retire. So if you feel that you're going to work another 20 years, 25 years, and your goal is to retire with $300,000, then that means you've got 25 years. That's the number that you have, and you have to work your way backwards. With a plan, you always start with the end in mind. How much money are you going to need at the age of 70, 75? Work that backwards. Divide that by the number of years, and that gives you an idea of how much money you need gonna need to start stacking away. And then once you get some money, then you can begin to diversify. Maybe you start doing some real estate things. Maybe you start doing some other things to accelerate the amount of money that you have that you are putting towards your savings goal. But don't count yourself out because you're 59 years of age. You've got a lot of time. Mind you, there are a lot of people that file bankruptcy and they bounce back even greater than they were prior than the bankruptcy. And that's sometimes in a period of 4 to 5 years. So the point is not how much you make. It's what you do with what you make and how much you know about what you make. Thank you so much for calling, Derek. Derek has a good question that many people are faced with right now, which is, if I'm just getting started, what do I do? Keith in Fayetteville, you've got a question.
How do you do?
I am well, Keith. Thank you so much for calling. What's your question?
Well, more of a comment than a question is, it is so true that you have to have a business of your own. Nowadays, I'm an entrepreneur in real estate since 1997.
And congratulations.
I left a 17-year-old job at the time to step out on faith because I knew, you know, to control your own destiny is the best security. And that's where we're missing out right now. We have to start looking at running our own business, owning our own companies, whether they're small or, you know, growing them large. Being an entrepreneur is so important right now. Right now, it's the easiest time in the world to become wealthy, believe it or not. There's less competition to be wealthy than there is to have a job. You know, you got 40, 50 people applying for a job, but for economic independence and financial freedom, they're not thinking about it at younger ages, and it's sad. But
that's right.
That's the key.
Thank you so much, Keith. I appreciate your calling. And do you have any regret?
Oh, not at all. Oh, my goodness. Not at all. I've been through the ups and the downs because of the real estate crash of 2008. But because I've been in the business so long, I'm able to position myself. My wife works from home. She runs our office.
That's great.
She runs the home office. We're blessed. You got to have your own.
That's it.
For those
I appreciate
who work with someone else, at least start, you know, putting your foot on the other side of the fence something out.
Keith, thank you so much for the encouragement, because other listeners need to hear people just like you and your wife who are doing your own things, and you have no regrets about it. And I appreciate you for calling and sharing that. You know, I started my first retail business back when I was 21 years old. And I started my first retail business, I'm talking storefront, everything, with $1,700 credit limit on my Visa. I had $1,700 available on my Visa, and I started a very profitable formal wear business. I did a cash advance. I paid $300 down for the rent. I mean, I was in Mississippi, so these were smaller stores, and the rent was a whole lot cheaper. But the point is that I started with what I had. I had $1,700 limit on my credit card. I used a cash advance. I used $300 for the rent, $500 to buy merchandise. So what I did was, the store was much larger than the space that I needed. So I put a wall up about a fourth of the way of the store and created this nice little unique storefront that looked like the size of someone's living room. But I did that intentionally so it had this intimate feel. Well, people thought that was my intention. My intention was, I didn't want you to see the rest of the store that I didn't have the money to fix up. So I put up a wall. I had some friends who knew construction, and they came in and they said, Ernest, we can't donate you any money, but we'll donate you a wall. So you have to find people around you that can lend to your vision and who will gather around your vision. So I said, this is my vision. Here's this store. Help me figure this out. They put up a wall. I ordered enough merchandise to outfit that little room. That was $500. I used about $200 to create these nice racks, and I pulled in furniture from home and created this living room environment. And then I used about $700 for decorations and all these other things. And it was called Winfrey's Formal Wear. Now, I intentionally named it Winfrey's for two reasons. Winfrey's had this very rich sound to it. And I was in Mississippi, and I named it Winfrey thinking that some people may think, oh, I wonder if this has anything to do with Oprah. Now, I wasn't suggesting that, right? But I called it Winfrey's. The business did gangbusters. But the point is, was I afraid? Absolutely. Everyone is afraid of doing something you've never done before. But the point is, I used what I had. And at that time, it was $1,700 on my credit card. So how did I get the rest of the money? Well, I started doing the formal wear business out of my car. So what I told clients was, we'll come to you, we'll measure you where you are, we'll deliver the tuxedos to you, and then we will return to the church and pick them back up. And I said, that's the kind of customer service we provide. The reality was, I turned a negative into a positive. I didn't have enough money to fully finish out the store like I wanted, so I did about 10 weddings out of my home before I opened. But I positioned myself as the only formal wear business that will come to you. We create that convenience for you. We wanted to add value to people's lives by saying, aren't you tired of having to send all of your groomsmen in to get measured? Aren't you tired of groomsmen not bringing in the suits on time? Aren't you tired of groomsmen not being able to make it to the store on time to get their tuxedo? We'll take all of that problem and challenges away from you. We'll come to you. We'll come to the dress rehearsal and we'll measure everyone and we'll deliver everything the day of the wedding. People loved it. I was giving people something that they couldn't get at that time in the city where I was. I started it with $1,700. You have to use what you have. So let's first talk to people about what it takes if you already own a business or a working career. The first thing you have to do if you own a business, and if you haven't started a business, don't worry, I'm coming to you. But these are folks who already own a business and you're trying to dig deeper. You're trying to mine your acres of diamonds in your own business, or you're working in a career. The first question I'm going to ask you is that the thing you need to focus on is, how do you create more value in your business? How do you create more value within yourself? That is the single fastest way to build wealth, is by creating something of value. So here's what I mean. If you sell a product, what can you do to make your product just irresistible? Should you offer more variations within your product? Should you find a better supplier? Because here's the thing. If your product is not flying off the shelves, then do you have the right product? Do you have the right customer base? Does your product offer enough value that it's resistible? See, any baker who knows how to bake a cake, if you put them in front of anyone else who bakes cakes and they know they can bake a fabulous cake, they will sell out of their cakes while others don't sell out of theirs. The point is, the person who makes the best cake has more value in a bakery because their cake tastes better than everyone else. That's creating value. Maybe you have a service that you offer. What can you offer within your service to enhance that service in such a way now that clients pick up the phone and call their friends and colleagues and brag about your service? How do you get them to say, man, girl, I absolutely met someone who just made my life so much easier, or took so much stress off of my plate, that made life for me better? Oh, man, I just can't do without this service. See, that's what Amazon knew that they were doing with Prime. They knew that once you paid that subscription rate for Prime, and you could click a button and virtually order anything off the internet, and it comes to your doorstep, sometimes the same day or the next day, and it's worry-free, they knew that the value wasn't in the product. The value wasn't in the prices. The value was in the convenience. That's what Amazon knew. So the question is, maybe you don't have to worry about changing your product or your service. Maybe there's an enhancement you can make to make what you do irresistible. When we come back, we'll talk about what you can do to study other success models, because I want to talk to you. 404-880-9255 is the number to reach me. And we're digging deep today in helping you to mine your own business. because it's about taking control of your destiny by gaining economic freedom. This is about entrepreneurship and being more entrepreneurial, even if you don't own a business. All right? I'm Ernest Davis, and this is Real Money, Real Talk.
Empowering you and your money. This is Real Money, Real Talk.
I always want to hear from you. And if you've got a question that you don't get a chance to ask me on air, please drop me a note, drop me a line. It's askernest@realmoneyrealtalk.com. askernest@realmoneyrealtalk.com. Send me your questions. I'll reply and I'll get you an answer. And it may be something that we may even discuss on this show. If you'd like a topic discussed on this show, email me that as well. You can always follow us at Real Money Real Talk Radio. Follow me at Real Money Real Talk Radio. We're talking about minding your own business on this show. So for those of you who have a business, and for those of you who work in a career, I want you to do something for me. No, do something for yourself. I want you to write down three compelling things about you or your business that sets you apart from everyone else. Everyone else in your industry, everyone else in your department where you work, in your company, write down, and don't say I dress better than others, okay? I mean something that people will pay you more money for. Write down three compelling things that set you apart from everyone else. Because see, this is your value proposition. Then ask others, is that something worth paying extra for? In other words, the three things you write down that you come up with, if it's in a business, you go ask someone else other than your friends, because your friends are always going to say good things about you, right? If they like you. Hopefully your friends do like you. Sometimes your friends don't like you, and maybe when they don't like you, you should ask them why, because maybe there's a valid reason. But what is it that you do that sets you apart from everyone else? If I lined up 10 businesses just like yours, what is it? Three things, compelling things that set you apart from everyone else on the list. If I lined you up with everyone else in your department, everyone else in your industry, what is it about you? Three compelling things that sets you apart from everyone else. Ask someone else that you don't know, is this something that people would pay more money for? And if so, how much? That's your value proposition. That's how you begin to set yourself apart. That's how you begin to earn more, because you're valued at more. I'll give you an example. Grubhub is a business that people will pay extra for. Why? Because they don't have to leave home. When Grubhub created that business, they knew that people would spend an extra $10, $15, whatever the number is, which is the reason why Uber is considering buying Grubhub. Did you know that? Because Uber's trying to add more value to themselves, because Uber is competing with Lyft. And when you look at it, Lyft pretty much does the same thing that Uber does. So Uber says, how do we add more value to our business? So instead of creating a business, they're having considerations on buying a business, a successful business. Sometimes getting into entrepreneurship doesn't mean you have to start something. It could mean that maybe you can buy something that already exists and you find a way to bring more value to it. So Uber's considering to buy Grubhub because they want to be able to separate themselves from Lyft. Lyft just bought a media company that advertises that's going to allow them to use their cars as mobile billboards. That's how they're going to add more value to their business. We all have to be thinking about how to add more value. So Grubhub, they knew that people would pay extra for the convenience of not having to leave home. People pay extra for a lot of things. I love this one. People pay extra to sit on certain seats in the plane. Think about it. The airplane has about three or four classes. They've got first class, second class, no class where you don't even get an assigned seat till you get to the gate. They've got middle seat class. They've got extra room, extra leg room class. It's amazing the number of classes that airlines have figured out how to make people pay more money for. And everybody on the plane lands in the city at the same time. But the person sitting next to you might have paid $200 more for their seat than you did. The person four rows ahead of you may have paid four times as much to your ticket. There's some people in first class that paid $2,000 for that ticket. Your ticket may have cost you $200. Why? Because the airlines figured out that people would pay extra for for something that they value. People pay extra to wait less. You ever been to Disney? I'm sure you've been to Disney. Now, Disney's got these things called fast track passes, right? That allow you to basically not have to wait an hour and a half for your favorite roller coaster ride. So you pay an extra $80 or $90 per person. Now you're riding the same roller coaster as everyone else, but you're paying an extra 3 to 4 times your ticket price for this fast pass. So you and your family don't have to wait in line. See, that's adding value. So how do you add more value? Well, here's a tip. Remember this. Success leaves clues. Here's what I mean by that. Anyone who is successful, any business who is successful, if you do your research and look at them closely, you will see some of the clues that are left behind. So what you should do is, if you have a business, you should study 3 businesses within your industry and 2 businesses that are not in your industry, and do a top to bottom research of those 5 companies that you would consider now to be just knocking it out the park. 5 businesses that if you said, man, if I could have a business successful as that, I would be happy. So that's something that I did. So I looked at businesses that I really admired, and I really admire Starbucks for their business, because they came in and they took something that was a commodity, which was coffee, a business that every gas station and every restaurant in America, in the world, sells, which is coffee. And they created a niche around coffee. I think that's ingenious. I study Delta Airlines, because Delta Airlines figured it out. They figured out how to create all these classes on a plane. They figured out how to charge you for bags and then the other bag. And then they have all these other perks that they do to really, they send you these emails to say, do you want to order dinner on your flight? What type of beverage do you want? Do you want to upgrade? They figured it out. I love the model. So I look at businesses like that to see, what is it can I learn from their business? What can I adopt from their model? Then I look for businesses that are in my industry. So if you're in the real estate industry, you're looking at other real estate businesses. If you're in the retail business, you look at other retail businesses like you. And they don't necessarily be businesses in your city. They can be businesses in other cities. But the idea is that success leaves clues. What clues are they leaving behind? See, the good thing about the internet is it allows you to research your competition or other businesses without even going in. You can read what their narrative is. You can read what their value proposition is. You can read what their slogan is. You can look at how their imagery is. You can take a shot of the imagery. You can look at what their value proposition is, and then look at how do you adapt that to your business. 404-880-9255. 404-880-WCOK. Thinking about starting a business? You have a business trying to figure out how to bring more value to it? Give me a call. Let's talk about it. When you look at other businesses and look for the clues that they leave, then you can even look at their reviews. Look at the reviews of your competitors. Look at the reviews of their see what the good and bad reviews are. What the good reviews are, it lets you know what their customers value. Those are the things that they find important about that business. Those are the things that keep them going to that business. But look at some of the poor reviews too. What the poor reviews reveal to you are opportunities. The things that your competitors don't get right, the things that your competitors lose customers over, are the things you can do to gain customers over. So the good and the bad, they're both clues as to what you should be doing, could be doing, and should not be doing. Then do an assessment. Take these models that you've studied, then compare them to what you have. Compare them to what you offer. Look at their website. Look at your website. Look at their narrative about how they describe their business. Look at what your narrative is. And then ask yourself and be honest with yourself. If you were searching for a business and you had all those businesses in your business, and let's say you didn't own this business, right? Would you do business with you based on what your website looks like? Now, I'm saying, when you look at the marketplace, people have choices. They have options. So the point is, when they look at other retail sites and your retail site, would they choose your site over other sites? Would they choose your business based on your reviews? Do you even have any reviews on your business? Do you have any social media presence? What are people saying about your business on social media presence? Do you have a referral program? See, everyone, most successful businesses have some sort of referral program and some sort of way of always taking a survey. Apple is another business that I study. You cannot get engaged with Apple in any type of transaction, whether it's Apple Care or whether it's buying something from them. The moment you hang up the phone, you get a survey to rate that associate and to rate your experience with them, because they want to be the first to know about their business, not the last to know. So compare your competitors, compare those who are successful in business with you, and ask yourself honestly, would you do business with you, or which business would you choose? Create more value. Remember, success leaves clues. You should spend time just downloading, diving deep into these businesses. And the website will tell you everything you really need to know. Now, after doing those three things, you then need to figure out how to turn that information into revenue generators. So start marketing within your, so most people ask, how do I grow my business? What do I do to grow my business? I'm in the process of starting a business, or I have a business. What do I do to grow my business? In fact, here's a question from Ask Ernest at Real Money Real Talk. It says, hello, my name is Tim, and I wanted to start by saying I really enjoy your show and a lot of knowledge and the information that you share. Thank you so much, Tim. I appreciate that. I created my circle of passion, which consists of spirituality at the top, musician and a growing actor and anti-aging and wellness entrepreneur. I receive money from all three industries, still training and increasing my knowledge in all the areas, but now I'm looking to go to the next level. How do I market myself to increase my cash flow? Right now is hit and miss here and there. Tim asked a very good question. It's, what do you do to increase your cash flow? What you do is, again, once you find out what you have and you make it more valuable, make it irresistible, make it something that people keep coming back to. If you have a product or a service that people don't continuously purchase, continuously use, then there's something about your service or your product that should or could be enhanced. Now, in some cases, you could have their own customer that you're targeting. Because some people, if you have a candle business and your candle business and you're selling units that are $40 per candle, because there are some candles out there that actually cost $70, $80, $90, $100. There are some candles that cost $4. Don't try to sell an $80 candle to a person who only wants to spend $4 for a candle. Because there's nothing you can do to enhance your business to get that $4 customer. Nothing wrong with the $4 customer. I buy $4 candles sometimes too. I buy $100 candles. It depends on the value of the candle. The point is, make sure you're targeting the right customer. And you start within your circle of influence. So once you have a customer, create a profile for that customer. What is it about that customer? Their age, their income bracket, their lifestyle, their social influence. Then ask that customer to give you referrals. Sometimes we have not because we ask not. Ask the customer to give you some referrals. Ask the customer to give you some written reviews. Ask the customer, hey, listen, I really appreciate you using my service and buying these products from me. What would it take to get you to buy every week or to buy every other week? Is it price? Is it packaging? Is it bundled? Then you maybe create some ideas and say, do you mind if I use you as my own internal? Maybe you pick 5 or 6 customers and you use them as your internal advisors to give you ideas about your business. Ideas really on how to reach their friends. You see, you ask them, say, hey, listen, what would make your friends or coworkers do business with me? What would make your girlfriend or your partner or your dude who you hang with that likes what you have that you're getting from me because they've made comments about how well it looks or how they like it? What is it that would help them get them to do business with me? Do your own research within your own sphere of influence, because success is simply replicating over and over what works and abandoning what does not. Don't spend your energy on what's not working. spend more energy fueling what is working. What is it that would make more people, just like your customer, do more business with you? And then you begin to market to those customers, those individuals that you're trying to get to do business with you. And then you keep a track record of what's working. Maybe you send in, maybe you have 30 prospects and you send one set of 10 this offer. Then you send the other set of 10 a different offer. Then another set of 10, a third offer. Which offer are you getting the most response from? Which email are you getting more feedback from? Which customers are ringing the phones off the hook? Do your own tracking, do your own research, and remember, success leaves clues. Follow the success. Follow the evidence of clues that will lead you to success. Victoria in Lawrenceville, you've got a question about the best way to start a business from scratch?
Yes, with an idea for an invention.
So you have an idea for an invention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. Have you done the step of proof of concept? And I'm so glad you called, because this actually leads me into those who are considering starting a business. The most important thing you have to do first is establish proof of concept. This idea that you have you had some people to try it out yet?
No, but I did look on USPTO website, like, to look for similar ideas, but I tried to make mine different.
So how do you know your idea has value? And I mean, and this is not an attack on you or your idea or your business. My question is this: how do you know that your idea is something that either solves a need or satisfies a desire? Or solves a problem? Have you taken the idea and given it to people to try it? Is it a product?
It's a product, but I have not asked people about
it. So then what you have to do is that you have to determine who your target audience is going to be. Because a business is only a business if you have something to sell that's of value. Now, it may be of value to you, but you're not the customer. You're the business. It has to be of value to someone who's going to pay for it, give you money for it. So create the concept. Don't ask you can start by asking some of your friends. But what's important is you have to ask people who don't know you, who will give you the truth about your product. And if you have a sample or a prototype that you can put in their hand, even better, that they get to try it out. You know, if it's a product that you can create a prototype of, spend the money to create two or three prototypes. Give it to some friends. Mm-hmm. So say, for example, I had a friend of mine who was making an automatic dog feeder that he was trying to start his business because he loved pets. So I said, okay, do the research to see what other dog feeders that are out there and what is it that they offer? What is it that their price point is? Can you produce something that's better for the price point? He said, yes. I said, well, give it to 10 people who are pet owners and see if it's something that they will pay you for. Say, hey, I'm going to let you use this for 30 days free of charge. If you don't like it, you can return it back to me. If you do like it, the price point is $59.99. So the point is this: if you loan it to 10 pet lovers and those 10 pet lovers give it back to you, then they don't want it. If those pet lovers say, no, my dog or my cat loves this thing, listen, here's the $59. It's the best thing since sliced bread. I love it. I think you ought to go on and produce more of these. That's proof of concept. You have to prove that what you have is a viable product that people want to pay you for. That is the first thing you do.
What if you want to do that, but you don't really know that many people and you're just like, your idea is like, okay, let me try it. Let me put it this way. Let me ask you without, like, giving away my idea.
I understand. Okay.
Do you wish that you had something easier to clean your back with?
Okay.
In the shower.
Do I wish that I had something that would help me clean my back in the shower?
Yeah.
Well, I just use a brush. I mean,
But is that... Is that difficult for you? Would it be difficult for you if you were elderly or like obese?
Well, see, now you bring up a good point. So then what you should do is you should find some elderly people and some people who would qualify to fit the target that you're targeting, create a prototype, give it to them, and just say, use this and tell me, does this make your life easier? You've got to know some older people. You've got to know some obese people. If not, your friends know some older people. Someone in your circle of influence fits this, because you got this idea, obviously, from someone who you saw that had a challenge. And you said, maybe I should create this to solve that challenge. Maybe I should create this to improve their lives. That person may have been you or someone in your family. That's where a lot of great ideas come from. The best ideas are the ones that help to solve a problem. So what you have to do is, if you know that a brush already exists in the marketplace, because you have to be honest with yourself, give them a brush and then give them a prototype of your product and ask them, does your product serve them better than the brush? If it does, ask them how much money would they be willing to pay for it? And then you have an idea of what that is. That at least gets you started with your proof of concept before you start to build a big business and spend all this money around something that you hadn't even proven to be a concept yet. I hope that helps. And I really appreciate your phone call.
Thank you. That does help. And I just want to give you an example before I go. Probably 5 years ago, I had a problem holding my phone up, and I was like, Mom, wouldn't it be great if I could make a sleeve on the back of my phone and we could invent that? And 5 years later, here comes those things that go on the back of the phone. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because when the universe gives ideas, and this is something for everyone. And again, Victoria, thank you so much for calling. When the universe, here's what I want everyone to understand. You can't sit on an idea, because when God gives us an idea, it's not just released to one person. It's released to a number of people. It's a seed that gets planted. And when you don't act on that idea, someone else acts on that idea. How many times have you been driving down the street and you say, oh man, look at that. I was just thinking about doing something just like that. That's not a coincidence. What that means is that ideas are not monolithic in the point that it's solely given to you. It's just given. Whoever seizes it and takes action upon it is the one who capitalizes on it. And then sometimes people take other people's ideas and find a way to make it better. Sometimes the idea didn't originate with you. It could have originated someplace else, maybe something you saw that triggered it. But proof of concept is critical. Now, for those of you, again, you don't have a business and you're thinking about starting a business, lead with your gift. I'm going to give you these three things to do after you find the proof of concept. Lead with your gift as you're trying to figure out what it is you should do. The acres of diamonds are always 99% within yourself. What is it that you do that you're uniquely qualified to do, that your gift strengthens you to do? And here's an example of it. Is there something that you do that people tend always complimenting you or always tend to notice in you? That unique gift or talent is something that people notice. That's one of your core strengths. And then you find out, so people who have this strength, how are they expressing this gift in the form of a business? So if you love clothing designs, then look at clothing designers. If you love decorating, you have an eye and creative eye, maybe interior decorating. You love homes and furniture. Look at interior decorating businesses. Look at, if you're in the counseling business, look at virtual counselors. Maybe you start a nonprofit in the area of what your gift is. Lead with your gift. That's where your money is. Then secondly, you leverage that gift. Start something you're passionate about. Focus on your passion. And here's how you know it's your passion. What is something that you would do for free? What is the work you would do for absolutely free if money was not an object? If money was not an issue in your life, you had all the money you need, but you had to do some type of work. What is the work that you would do for free? That is a passion project. And third, find three people who are successful at doing what you want to do and study them. Hit them up on social media, inbox them, call them, email them, ask someone to introduce you to them, and ask them to share with you the pros and cons of that business. What's the hours like? What type of commitment is it going to require? How do they recommend you start? And how much money do you allocate for all these things they're recommending? Like if they say, well, go get you an accountant or go get you an attorney to start the business, make sure you ask them how much should you spend. Because what you don't want to do is overspend in an area that you don't have to spend as much money in. So it's asking the right questions from the right people that's going to help you determine how you create a path for yourself. Remember, success leaves clues. Find three people who are successful at doing what you want to do, talk to them, interview them, and then ask yourself, after doing those three things, is this something that you really want to do? Observe yourself. Digest all of this. Does this make you excited? Does it make you fearful? And don't use fear as a barometer, because we all get afraid often of failing, of whenever we talk about doing something that we've never done before. Once you introduce yourself to the idea, the concept, and you lead with your gift will always make room for you. When we come back, I'm going to share a few stories with you to help you understand a little bit more about what I'm saying about leading with your gift and the importance of paying attention to what your heart and your mind is saying to you. I want you to be successful even more than you do. I really do. That's part of why I've been put here. And I accept that and I embrace that. You matter to me. Your success matters to me. This is Real Money, Real Talk. I'm Ernest Davis. On the other side of this, let's talk about what it takes to be more intentional about minding your gift.
Empowering you and your money. This is Real Money, Real Talk.
Welcome back to Real Money, Real Talk. Again, if you got a question, send me an email at askernest@realmoneyrealtalk.com. askernest@realmoneyrealtalk.com. Follow us at Real Money Real Talk Radio. We're talking about what it takes to mine your own business. And even if you don't want to own a business, and if you're in a career, you are a business. It's human capital. It's really determining how do you mine within yourself to create more value. You do this by doing what you do best and leveraging your gift. Study the success of others within your industry, within your line of work. And then if you don't have a desire to study others or to study what makes others successful in your industry, that could be an indicator that you're in the wrong industry. If you're in banking and you have no desire when you come home on weekends to study people who are successful in banking to determine what patterns and what steps you can take to rise in that area or that field, if you say, man, when I leave work, I'm not trying to spend any more time at home thinking about what I do. Hint, you may be doing the wrong thing, because no one ever has time or an issue spending time with their gift. You can't get away from your gift. You can't get away from your talent. It's something, that's why some people who focus on doing what they love, they say it's never work, because they love doing it. It's almost like the hobby that they do to make money from. And it's okay to be honest with yourself. I remember when I was a music major in college, and I always thought I wanted to be a professional musician. I had a music scholarship. So what did I do? I did what I'm telling you to do. I studied the success of others. So I was a saxophone player. And I just love the music of Kenny G. I love the music of Grover Washington Jr. And I played piano too. And I love the piano playing of Bob James. I mean, I was a jazz head and still am. So what I did was, being in radio allowed me to have access to many of these artists, oftentimes backstage when they were in concert. So I would ask all of them. I'd ask Bob James. I asked Grover Washington. I asked Najee. I asked Kenny G. I said, give me three things I need to do to have the kind of success that you have. And tell me something that I should be doing to leverage myself to be different than others. They all gave me their own piece of advice, but there was one common denominator that they all said in some form or fashion. Be prepared to practice 8 to 10 hours a day. I said, what do you mean 8 to 10? That's like when we don't perform, we're always practicing. We're always in some nightclub listening to other musicians. We're always at home. One person even told me, I sleep with my horn just so if I wake up in the middle of the night and if I have an idea, I can play it on my saxophone. Now, here's what I knew. As much as I loved music, I knew that I was not going to spend 8 to 10 hours a day practicing. It just wasn't in me. I loved it, but I didn't love it like that. So the point I'm trying to say is I knew that I wanted to be one of the best. So I had to ask myself, am I willing to do what the best do to be one of the best? And I had to be honest with myself. So what did I do? I opted not to pursue music as a professional career. Instead, hey, I still had a jazz band. You know, I would play for the church. I would do these other things that musically fed this desire within me. But I chose another career path. I chose the career path that I didn't mind spending 8 to 10 hours doing every single day. The point I'm trying to say is you must, during this time of social distancing, don't distance yourself from your gift. Don't distance yourself from that calling that's within you. Get closer to it. And if you find that what you're doing is not the right thing, don't spend another waking hour doing anything other than what you were destined to do. It's the time of the show where I always give you my golden nugget that's worth more than money. And as I think about that, the reason why I'm so passionate about doing what you should do and been called to do is that, you know, as we approach June, I tend to get a little sad every year because this was the time, you know, this is the time that we start to think about fathers. After we celebrate Mother's Day, we celebrate Father's Day. And see, my dad died around this time of year. But the thing that I remember most is that he died years before he was actually laid to rest. And here's what I mean. See, my dad started dying a slow death after he retired. The day he retired was the day he started his toll to death. Why? Because, see, he never found meaning and purpose beyond his job. So as long as he was working daily and he had a place to go for 8 hours, he never had time to reflect on what that real purpose was, that purpose of being and what is it that he really wanted to do. But then came the day that he retired and it all changed. Now he had all day to think about the dreams he never pursued, all day to think about the aspirations he turned his back to on. Each day was a day of living in regret of what if. But see, it was too late. So that's when he started dying. His soul started dying. And see, the only thing that gets worse than failure, the only thing that's worse than failure is regret. Because see, in failure, there's always room to bounce back. In failure, you can get back up and try again. In failure, you can make the necessary adjustments and perfect the areas of errors. In fact, failure is the key to learning something that you don't know, because failure always teaches you something that you don't know, something you should do different, something you should be better in. But regret, on the other hand, is an internal sore that never really heals, because regret is looking backwards at a period of time that you cannot change. My father reminded me that was the image that I said I would never, ever allow myself to die in regret. See, this pandemic forces all of us to slow down, reflect, think. What is it that your heart is telling you? What is it that your mind is telling you? What is it that your gift is leading you to do? See, when you don't have to listen to crowds, all you have to listen to is yourself, your heart. What is that small voice saying to you? When no other voices can be heard, the only one that's speaking is the voice within your heart. So my golden nugget is this, and it's worth more than money. Write the song that makes your heart sing. Don't ever let a life of regret be an option for you. Now is the only time you have command of, because tomorrow really may be too late. So if today is all that you have, and it is all that you have, remember, your life is the song. Your life is the song. But you get to be the composer. And it's only you can compose your own song. Let me say that again. Your life is the song, but you are the composer of that song. And you're the only one that can write your own story. So don't just dream. Don't just dream. A dream written down with a date, that is what becomes a goal. A goal broken down into steps becomes a plan. A plan backed by action becomes reality. Nibble on that. Email me, let me know what your mind and heart is saying to you, and I want to help you. Ask Ernest at realmoneyrealtalk.com. Email me your questions, your thoughts, your comments, and even stories I'd like to share, okay? Remember, focus on you. Focus on your gift. Focus.